Okay, good afternoon, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Rabbi Ephraim Polakoff. I'm the rabbi at Beis Tefillah, the Edward Avenue Shul down the block, also a rabbi in DRS and SKA. So the topic that I'm speaking about this morning is teens and technology, what you do and what you know and what you don't. So I'm sure you know a lot, and looks like some of you may have teenage sons or daughters. So we'll talk a little bit about, you know, technology as it applies to teens, but we'll see that really this is a broader topic and it applies obviously not only to teens but to families. I think today's theme is building strong families. So it applies to families as well. It applies to, you know, to ourselves. It applies to individuals. It really applies to everyone, but we'll focus a little bit more on teens as we progress. I don't want you to think that I'm a rabbi coming in and bashing technology. You know, anytime a rabbi speaks about technology, everyone kind of thinks, oh, he's coming to, you know, bash technology to say how terrible it is. That's not my goal here. That's not what I'm coming to do. I myself use technology to a great extent, as you can see. I'm recording this on an iPhone. I have an iPad that I use in school. I have a computer. I do everything on computer. My wife always makes fun of me that I rarely write. Everything is typed. Everything is saved on Google Drive. I can access it anywhere in the world. So I'm very, very integrated into the world of technology. I'm very involved in it, and I use it. And I think it certainly can be used as a tremendous bracha. And as most things in life, you know, have dual aspects to them. They have flip sides of the same coin. And you can have an aspect that's a bracha, and you can have an aspect that's a klala as well. Something that I always found very interesting, if we look, we're going to read Parshas Re'eh in a couple of weeks. So Parshas Re'eh begins, Re'eh Anochi Nosen Lifnechem Hayom Bracha Uklala. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, look, I'm giving before you today a bracha and a klala, a blessing and a curse. What is the blessing and what's the curse? And you would think the blessing is, you know, on one extreme and the curse is on the other. They're two drastically different things. But if we look at the next psukim, it's very clear that that's not the case. Es habracha, what's the bracha? Asher tishmu'u el mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem. If you listen to the mitzvos, that's the bracha. You'll get the bracha if you listen to the mitzvos. And what's the klala? The next pasuk, v'haklala im lo tishmu'u el mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem. If you don't listen to the mitzvos, that's going to be the klala. So the bracha and the klala, we find it's really just, again, flip sides of the same coin. This is not something drastically different. It's not that you have one extreme bracha and the other extreme klala. You can have one item, you can have one object, you can have one institution, one person, and it could have on the one side, it could be a bracha, on the other side, it could be a klala. And that's with many things in life. And I think certainly we all recognize the tremendous bracha that certainly is inherent in technology and the way that we have it nowadays. But at the same time, we recognize that there's the potential for klala as well. And it's just flip sides of the same coin. It's using the same technology, the same device for one purpose and then using it for another purpose. It's all the same. So let's talk a little bit about the positives first, because, you know, after all, let's start on a good foot. So number one, we live in an age of communication, and we know that news can be shared instantly. As soon as things happen, we receive that information, we get the information, we're able to deal with it. Family members can see pictures of newborn babies literally seconds after they're born. I'm sure, you know, you go back 20 years, not even, you go back 10 years, and, you know, you had to call, and before the cell phones, you had to find a payphone where you can call someone and you can, you can let them know, let the parents know, let the grandparents know. And here, within seconds, you know, everyone on your WhatsApp chat, everyone on your in your contact list can have pictures, up-to-date pictures of exactly how the newborn baby looks as soon as it comes out. Sometimes you want to give it a minute to clean them up a little bit, but right away, instantaneously, you have this information. We can stay in touch with people that otherwise we wouldn't be able to stay in touch with. Family, friends that live thousands of miles away. It used to be we had to send letters, we had to do things. You know, now it's you send them a text, you FaceTime them. Things are very easy. Communication is very easy. So that's one. Number two, we live in an age of information. Information is easily accessed. We can research anything. We can Google anything. My son was just at the doctor the other day, and at the doctor's office there was a big picture of a cruise ship on the wall in the examining room, and my son asked, you know, what's bigger, a cruise ship or a container ship? It's a good question. So I said, ask the doctor when he comes in. So the doctor came in, and my son asked him this question, and he said, it's a good question. You'll have to Google it. That's the go-to. That's the automatic response. And you can get that information in seconds, right? At your fingertips, on your phone, you can get information of how long is the average container ship, what's the biggest ship in the world. I mean, the information is at our fingertips. And everything, whether it's Chol, whether it's Kodesh, whether it's Torah, these things, you can research these things literally in seconds. And that's also leads me to the third positive that I see in technology is the access to Torah. Before books were translated, into English, so only those who had a background had access to Torah, because only if you had a background could you open up a Tanakh and read it, could you open up a Gemara and read it. And now Baruch Hashem, with the translation, Art Scroll and other publishing companies, they translated so many books in the Torah, and it's easy to access all of this information. I can read Tanakh in English, I can read Gemara in English, I can read it in French. We have tremendous access to Torah. With the advent of technology and the internet in particular, the access to Torah is almost unlimited. You go to a site like YU Torah. So YU Torah at the top has a search bar, and it says search through, I checked this morning, 147,000 shiurim. That's how many shiurim are on YU Torah. Audio shiurim, 147,000. That's a tremendous number. A person could spend literally all their time just on YU Torah, going from one person to the next, from one Rav to the next, from one Rebbetzin to the next, listening to Shiurim day and night. Unbelievable. Torah anytime. We have all the kashrus agencies have websites with incredible, literally vast information that's available on these websites in terms of kashrus and other things. Dafyomi, anyone who wants to learn Dafyomi, you don't have to go to a Dafyomi shir anymore, right? Of course, it's recommended. It's always better to go to a shir in person. But you can go online. You can find multiple Daf Yomi Shiurim, many Daf Yomi Shiurim all over the country. You can listen to Daf Yomi Shiurim in Israel. You can listen in American. You can listen in pretty much any language that you wish. There are videos of how to do things, videos of the Mishkan and how the Mishkan looked and how the Beis HaMikdash looked. There are databases, Hebrew books that has 70,000 or so scanned in Sfarim, where you can print them out, you can search them. Bar Ilan database with thousands and thousands. Otzar HaChachma, we're talking about vast databases with thousands and thousands of books, some of them scanned, some of them just inputted in digitally, but vast amounts of information that are easily available, that are easily accessible, and it's a tremendous, tremendous bracha. And I always tell people, it's almost no excuse not to learn Torah anymore. It used to be people had an excuse. I don't have a background, so I can't learn. There's no excuse anymore. Everything is accessible in English. Everything is accessible to everyone at all times. You could be in the car. You could be on the train. You could be walking. You have all of this at your fingertips. It's a tremendous, tremendous bracha. At the same time, the flip side of this, just like we have the bracha, we have the klala as well. And I think we all recognize some of the negatives. Number one, in terms of, we spoke about communication and connection, so we know that sometimes, unfortunately, technology is used to connect people in a negative way. Baruch Hashem, in our communities, we don't experience that so much, but we know, we listen to the news, we hear about how terrorists are connecting with each other and people are connecting with each other, bad people, people who want to do evil things, and they're connecting with each other in a very negative sense. So that's one aspect. But again, Baruch Hashem, it doesn't really exist too much in our community. Baruch Hashem, it doesn't exist too much in our community, but we do hear, unfortunately, of horror stories of people, whether it's kids or adults, that go online and find people that they would have been better off not finding, and either they meet up with these people or they have they're influenced by these people. There are horror stories out there. Baruch Hashem, it's not too much, and I'll mention a statistic in a minute, but it exists. It exists, so we do have to be cognizant of it. Just like news can be shared instantly, so bad news can also be shared instantly. We know it in a moment. And we have almost, some psychologists have coined the term mean world syndrome, that we look out at the world as a very mean place. It's a bad place. Why? Because we're inundated by horror stories. We're inundated by news, by media, that just tell us about all these terrible things that are going on in the world, bombings and terrorist attacks and all of these things. And we have a certain perspective, and sometimes kids are growing up with that perspective. Unfortunately, also it leads to desensitization. Very often you have kids who are watching, as terrible as it sounds, kids who are watching beheadings, right? The ISIS beheadings that are on on YouTube and online and things like that. So some of them were taken down. You have shootings and killings and all these terrible violent acts that are real time, and they're all being broadcast all over the world easily accessible to any child. So some of them have a little warning, you know, this is a little bit graphic, and then you can press play. But otherwise, they're easily accessible, really, to anyone out there. We also have, well, you know, in terms of the third aspect of all the access to Torah, all the access to Kedusha, unfortunately, we know there's a tremendous access to Tumah, to negative and impure influences as well. All of the immorality, immodesty, pornography that's out there on the internet, which used to be less accessible, is now accessible at the click of a button. Anyone sitting at their computer, anyone literally walking down the street on their phone can click a button and can just access all of the terrible impurity that was for many, many years difficult to access. You know, you had to bend over backwards to access this type of thing. And we know, unfortunately, people have been accessing these types of things for many, many years. But it used to be that you had to have a strategy and a plan of how to do it. You know, you had to do it in secret and make sure nobody saw you and go to this place and go to that place and hide, you know, whatever paraphernalia you got your hands on. And now there's no need. Now there's no need. You just go in a little corner by yourself. No one can see your screen. Boom. You click a button and that's it. You click with your finger and you have access to everything that's out there. So we know it's a nisayon. Let's shift a little bit and talk about teens. Much of what I'm going to share today actually comes from teens themselves. What I decided to do in advance of this talk was to create a survey. I used technology. I went onto Google Forms, for those of you who are not familiar with it, but it's an app in Google, and you can create your own survey. And I created a survey all about technology, and I sent it to about 5 people. Within 2 days, I got 140 responses, just to tell you how connected teens are to technology. And it could have been more if I tried a little bit harder, and you know, and I had reached out to more people. It could have been, you know, more than that. But I got 140 responses from teens, not only from this area, some from this area, some from other areas. I tried to branch out to other parts mostly in the tri-state area. But teenagers coming out of 9th grade through coming out of 12th grade, high school kids. These are actual statistics from high school kids that I got in the last week. Orthodox kids. I know sometimes you can go online and you can find statistics from, you know, public school kids. It's going to be a little bit different. But this is actual information. It's 140 responses. I wasn't 1,000, but I found it a little bit eye-opening. You see also, just number as an aside, the dizzying pace of technology. You know, you see how quickly things can be shared. That's also the speed that technology is developing, which means that we have to be on top of it because, you know, the kids are on top of it. So if the kids are on top of it, we have to be on top of it also. But things are developing at a dizzying speed. Every week, every month, new technology is coming out. Things are becoming outdated. And all of a sudden, you know, those of us with iPhones know, you know, after a year or two, your iPhone is pretty much obsolete. You know, the apps don't work anymore. Your memory is full. And, you know, they make it that way. They want to make money. But it becomes the technology very quickly. There's a very quick turnaround. Just some numbers. These are actual numbers, actual statistics from this survey. 97% of these teenagers have a smartphone. 97%. That means almost every single kid has a smartphone nowadays. Again, in the tri-state area, in our communities, obviously every community is going to be a little bit different, but communities like ours, 97% have a smartphone. 78% have a laptop. 78%. That means almost, again, you're talking about over 3/4 of the kids have a laptop, and 50% have a tablet. So there's a tremendous access to technology, a tremendous access to the things out there. On a regular school day, 40% are using technology for 4 hours or more on a school day. 4 hours or more on a school day, and about 10% are using it for 6 hours. On a Sunday, 60% are using it 4 hours or more, and 11% are using it for 8 hours on a Sunday. 11%. Right? That means if you have, you know, you have a room of 10 kids, One of those kids is going to be using it for 8 hours on a Sunday. But that's the usage. It's interesting. This I wasn't aware of. But most of the heavy usage of teens, from their own reports, is for entertainment. About 76% said that most of their usage is for entertainment. About 66% of their usage is for social reasons, social connections, social interactions with their friends. And in terms of gathering information, about 54% of their energy is being spent on gaining information. That's not the most popular usage of technology for these teens. It's mostly entertainment, then social, and then information. In terms of restrictions, and by the way, every smartphone has restrictions built in. You can enable restrictions on your smartphone where there's a code and there are certain things that are restricted. Almost 50% of the kids have absolutely no restrictions on their smartphone. Zero. Right? About 50% of kids have absolutely no restrictions. In terms of phone restrictions, 71% responded that they have no phone restrictions. By the way, the first restrictions were any restrictions. That's timing restrictions, you know, if parents take away the phone at night and things like that. That's 50% have zero. Right? They have total open access without any restrictions whatsoever. In terms of cell phone restrictions, smartphone restrictions, 71% have no restrictions on their phone. 70% have no filter on their computer. So we're talking about a tremendous access of teenagers to everything that's out there. Everything that's out there in the world, everything that's out there on the internet. I asked them also if they knew how to get around the restrictions that their parents set up. Okay, so these were for the ones that have restrictions that their parents enabled, so they know how to get around them. On a phone, 44% said they know how to get around them. That means almost half the kids know how to get around whatever their parents are doing in terms of enabling restrictions. On a computer, it was less. Only about 22% said that they knew how to get around computer filters that their parents set up. But that's an alarming number. That means even the parents that are trying, your kids, you know, for the most part, are two steps ahead of you. It's an important thing to know. I asked them, would they impose restrictions on their children? Okay, and pretty much, again, the numbers were a little bit different for phones and computers, but pretty much the way it broke down was 50% said unsure, they were undecided, 25% said absolutely, and 25% said no. So it's a very interesting breakdown in terms of the statistics of what we're looking at, what the teens themselves are responding. Now, there are many positives in terms of the teens, you know, teenagers using technology. Again, access, they have tremendous access to information that we didn't have growing up. And that could be a good thing, you know, in terms of the things that they can learn, the things that they know. Very often, you know, teenagers are a little bit more worldly than we were growing up just because of the access that they have and about all the things that they hear and they learn on a daily basis. In some ways, they grow up faster, which, you know, can be good or bad. But there is some element of positivity to that. There is a rumor and a myth, I believe, that teenagers don't socialize anymore because they're all on their phones. I believe strongly, and I have daily access to hundreds of teens, that that's a complete myth. They absolutely socialize. If you go into a lunchroom, a cafeteria, at breakfast or lunch, it's as loud as it was when I was a kid and probably as when you were a kid as well. They are all on their phones at the same time. But they are socializing with their phones. It's just a different type of socialization than what we did. We didn't socialize with our phones in our hand and showing our friends things or, you know, texting our friends as we're talking to them. But that's what the kids are doing. You know, there are individual kids that you do see in the halls, secluded by themselves with their headphones in, you know, alone, being antisocial. That does exist. I would venture to say that probably before technology, they were doing the same thing with a book, or they were doing the same thing with other things, those types of kids. But for the vast majority of kids, they socialize just like anyone else. They very much feel that it helps them. If I asked them in general, do you feel technology helps you? 71% responded positively that it helps them. 61% said that it helps them in school. 64% said that it helps them socially. Just an interesting side statistic. I asked them, do you feel that introducing more technology into education will help you learn better? Because that's where schools are headed. 50-50. 50% said yes, 50% said no. Just an interesting statistic to put out there, because that's where the schools are going, and the kids themselves are not convinced that it's actually going to help. In terms of the negatives, and we all know this, but just to talk about some of them, there is a skewed perspective from teens as to what's socially acceptable. They have a habit of taking pictures of everything that they see and everyone that they see, pictures or videos. That's something that, again, is a generational thing. Everyone's walking around with cameras. We didn't have that. You know, only the tourists would walk around with cameras on that strap in New York City. Now everyone's walking around a camera, you know, on their phone. And there is a tendency to take pictures and to share them and to, you know, to say things that, you know, is not necessarily socially acceptable. That's an important thing, and there needs to be an education. I feel very strongly about this, that there needs to be an education, both from the home, and I believe from the school as well, in terms of what is socially acceptable and what's not socially acceptable. Kids have to be taught, just like kids had to be taught before technology, what's socially acceptable and what's not. They have to be taught that with a phone in your hand, what's socially acceptable and what's not. It's not a good excuse to say, well, you know, the kid's not acting socially in a socially acceptable way. Well, they have to be taught, just like anything else in life. Kids have to be taught how to act. So they have to be taught how to act with a phone in their hand. They have to be taught how to act while using technology. Sometimes kids don't work as hard as maybe they used to because things come very easy to them. They can just Google any information that they need to know. Everything is available on their phone. Everything is available at the click of a button in a moment's notice. They have access to anything. So that does engender a little bit of a laziness, but not completely. 61%, I asked them on a scale of 1 to 5, how many of you think that you waste time with technology? 61% answered 4 or 5 that they waste a significant amount of time with technology. If you add in the 3, which is kind of like the middle of the road, it's 91%. That was an added 30%. So many of them teenagers admittedly, feel that like they're wasting their time. They do have a tremendous access to immodesty, immorality, pornography, things that we discussed. Just some quotes from the teens. I asked them, what would you tell your parents or educators? This was a completely anonymous survey, by the way. That was the only way I was going to get real responses. Completely anonymous. I said, what would you tell your parents or educators about teens and technology? These are some actual responses, word for word. The spelling was atrocious, by the way. Number one, don't be naive. Every teenage boy who has access to view inappropriate things will do so, especially with time on their hands. That's from an actual kid, an actual teenager. Number two, parents don't understand that this generation has the hardest temptation to overcome in regards to inappropriate stuff. Actual quote from this past week. Number three, many teens know that it hurts them when they use technology inappropriately, but they don't want to stop doing it. Okay, so these are actual quotes from kids that they recognize. Teenagers are smart. They're smart. They know what's going on. They recognize that it's a problem. And I think it's something that we have to really take charge of. There's a very powerful Rashi in Parshas Kisisa. After the Chet HaEgel, right? Klal Yisrael worships the Egel. Moshe Rabbeinu breaks the Luchos. And Moshe comes to Hashem and he tells him, Vayoshev Moshe al Hashem vayomer ana chata ha'am azeh. The nation sinned. Chata'a gedola, a great sin. Vayasu lahem Elohei Zahav. And they made themselves a golden god, a golden calf. So if you just read the Pasuk, you know, at face value, it sounds like Moshe is just recounting. Rashi explains, no, he's accusing. He's accusing God. Listen to this powerful Rashi. Elohei Zahav, atahu shegaramta lahem. You caused this, Hashem. This is what Moshe is saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You caused this. Why? Because you gave them all of this gold. You gave them everything that they wanted. What are they going to do? And Rashi brings a famous mashal. And Rashi says that it's like a melech who gives everything that he gives everything to the prince. He gives him good food and good drink. And he dresses him nicely. And he gives him all the money that he wants. And what happens, says Rashi, ma'amido bepesach beis zonos. You put him in an appropriate place. You take that kid who has everything. And you put him in an inappropriate situation, ma yaseh haben shelo yachta. What's the kid going to do? Of course he's going to sin. Do you blame this child? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you blame Klal Yisrael? They had all of these things. Of course they're going to sin with it. And I think that as parents and as educators, we have to have that perspective. Ma yaseh haben shelo yachta. If we give our kids access to everything, and we give them just unfettered, as we said, 50%, no restrictions whatsoever. We give them open access. Do whatever you want. Mayasa ben shelo yechta. Of course they're going to fall prey to it. They have a Yetzer Hara just like we have a Yetzer Hara. What do we do about it? So I think number one is we have to model appropriate behavior. Actual quote from a teen. If the parents are going to be on their phones, then of course the children will also constantly be on their phones. Actual quote from a teenager. So we have to model proper etiquette when it comes to technology. And sometimes we don't, especially because we're not as savvy. We're not as used to it. So sometimes all of a sudden we find ourselves, totally taken by it. And the kids are a little bit more savvy than us. But if the parents are doing it, the kids are going to do it. Everything that we model, that's what the kids are going to follow. In terms of restrictions, this was fascinating. The kids had a spectrum of responses. On the one hand, there were kids that responded, in a very strong fashion, limit what they can access and not let them figure out a way around it, right? Literally, some kids were like, you got to just impose limits, impose restrictions, and not let the kids figure out ways around it. But then there were many other kids who said, leave it alone. Trust your kids. Don't impose anything. Of course there were teens who said that. So I think that it's important, as with many things in life, it's important to strike a balance. Many psychologists will tell you, I don't have the studies, you know, at the tips of my fingers, but if you do a little research, you'll find that when it comes to parenting, there are different models. There's the authoritarian model, which is the strong arm, you know, dictator type parent, and then you have the wishy-washy parent that lets their kids basically run amok and do whatever they want. And pretty much across the board, psychologists agree that the best type of parenting, and in education is really the same thing, is what's called authoritative. Authoritative means there are rules, there are guidelines, there are things in place, but there's an open line of communication. It's a flexible system. It's not dictatorship where whatever I say goes, and if you don't obey me, go to your room and give me all your technology for the next week. Right? Sometimes that might be appropriate, but that's not the standard. But it's a system where we have rules, there are regulations, there are restrictions, but it's flexible. There are things, it's malleable. Kids do not want to be forced. That was clear across the board throughout all the responses. Many responses I got like this: the more you restrict the teen, the more they'll want to rebel and discover the things restricted. It's better off to start off at first with trust. Another comment: the more restrictions, the more rebellion. Many, many kids express this, that they don't want their parents to just come down hard and be that authoritarian type of parent, you know, taking away everything, restricting everything, no questions asked, no discussion, no communication. And we find the Gemara in Kiddushin says that you have to be careful what you do with your older children, you know, with your teenagers, because if you get them angry, they might lash out at you. And you're going to be over on Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. You're putting a stumbling block in front of your kids. Because when you have older kids, younger kids, it's a little bit easier. You can boss them around. You can tell them, you know, don't do this, do the other thing. And if not, you know, put them in their room, give them a timeout, and that's it. With teenagers, you can't do that. They're too strong-willed. They're too much of an adult to be able to really just boss them around like that nowadays. So I don't believe that that's the right approach, to just come down hard, authoritarian, dictator type. At the same time, you know, we do believe in Judaism, we believe in restrictions. Chazal instituted an Isser Yichud, question if it's Doraisa or Darabanan, but Chazal instituted an Isser Yichud, a man and a woman can't be alone together in a room. Any man, any woman. Why? Because Chazal were nervous. Things can happen. Things do happen out in the world. You have to be careful. You have to impose the necessary restrictions. The Torah does not shy away from talking about the Yetzer Hara. We know there's a parsha of Eishes Yifas Toar, where there's people, the soldiers out at battle, and the Torah has a different system for them. And I think that's an important perspective also. We have to recognize, number one, what the Yetzer Hara is, and we also have to recognize that the Yetzer Hara is different for teenagers than it is for adults. It's different for teenage boys than it is for teenage girls. The Yetzer Hara is different, and we have to deal with the different circumstances in which we find ourselves and in which they find themselves. But at the same time, we have to ensure that there is some level of restriction. We daven every morning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should not bring us lidei nisayon. We say that in Birchos HaShachar. We don't want nisayonos. We don't want, you know, that's the way that a person grows, but we don't want that lechatchila. It's not something that we want at the outset to be put in that situation. One thing that I think it's important to discuss, and we only have about 2 minutes left, the trust issue, because many of the teens express this idea of trust. I think that it's important to recognize that we can impose restrictions and still be trusting the kids at the same time. Because I think that it's important to communicate a couple of things. Number one, it's important to communicate. And very often, if parents just lay down the law and impose restrictions without communication, that's what the kids are talking about, that you're forcing us and you're imposing these things without discussing it, without having a conversation. That's, I think, what turns kids off. But if you have an open communication and you discuss, you know, what are the issues, what are the problems, explain why it's bad, why the negative influences that are out there are so bad for them, and discuss why we have restrictions. Discuss the concept of an issur yichud. And I think also what's also so important is that the parents have to normalize the struggle. Parents should say, you know, that they also have a yetzer hara. Again, you don't have to get into all of the nitty gritty and all of the times that we've made mistakes in our lifetime, but we have to recognize, the kids have to hear from us that this is not because you're a kid and I'm an adult. This is because you're a human being, because you're a person. You're a human being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created you with a Yetzer Hara, just like He created me with a Yetzer Hara, just like He created all of us with a Yetzer Hara. And it's not that I don't trust you, it's that we, you know, sometimes don't trust ourselves, and we know what human nature is, and we have to make sure that we are taken care of. It's not that, it's not me versus you. It's not parent doesn't trust child. That's where I think the kids they put up their defense systems. But if we communicate the message that this is a general struggle, this is a humanity struggle. It's not about you as a teenager and me as the authoritative parent, right? It's about a system. It's about human beings. It's about a general struggle. I think that that's something that's so powerful to normalize it. I think also it's important to teach the kids that this, you know, part of life and part of gevura and power in life is overcoming your yetzer hara. And sometimes you're going to fail. Sometimes you're going to fall. Sometimes you're going to slip up. We all make mistakes. That's also something that's crucial to communicate to the kids that we have to do that. But you know, at the same time, the pasuk in Kohelet tells us, "Ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov lo yechta." There's no tzaddik in the world who doesn't sin. Everybody's going to mess up. But at the same time, the pasuk in Mishlei says, "Kisheva yipol tzaddik v'kam." That the way to become a tzaddik is by falling and getting it back up. That's the goal. That's the idea. It's not that you're not going to be perfect. There's going to be some times that you're going to slip up. Right? But we have to enable them to make the healthy decisions. But that has to be through communication. That has to be through dialogue and through explaining why these things are bad. And let's set up the restrictions together. Let's decide what's important to restrict, what's important to limit. You know, maybe a time limit, maybe a certain time at night. Maybe certain things, certain websites that are inappropriate, or certain filters that we feel will do the job. Let's do it together. Let's have a team effort, because we recognize, just like it's important for me, it's important for you as a human being. One last point, and with this we'll conclude. Many teens, and I've heard this issue expressed by parents, you know, concern. Many teens express ideas, you know, different questions about emunah. You know, why does God do this? Why does God do that? I don't understand the system. You know, questions about faith in general. I once had a conversation with an experienced educator with many more years experience than me, and he explained to me something that Rav Elchanan Wasserman actually says in a letter. And Rav Elchanan Wasserman asks, you know, you have all these bright people in the world. We know that Judaism is correct. We know that the Torah is true. It's obvious to us. It's logical. It makes sense. Many of the other things in the world don't make sense out there. So why is it that there are so many bright, intelligent people who miss the boat? Why is it you have the Einsteins and you have all these, you know, philosophers who just completely miss the boat? And the answer that Rav Elchanan Wasserman says is that the more we're steeped in our physical lusts and desires, the more our vision is clouded. Because those two things are not compatible. If we're steeped in our desires, we're steeped in our lusts, it's incompatible with spirituality. We can't make the two coalesce. It's impossible. And that's why, and if you look at the life stories of many of the giants in different fields in the world, well, many of them were not, you know, such moral people when it came to issues of spirituality and morality. But I think it's important to recognize that the more our teens are steeped in their desires and their lusts, and the more they're given this open access and just, you know, do what you want and experiment as you want, it's incompatible with spirituality. It's incompatible with Judaism. When you're that steeped in the physical, you can't focus on the spiritual also. They're bothered by it. So they have to find different problems and different questions. Question with emunah, this doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense. I believe the vast majority of teens who express those ideas, it's emotional. It's not really intellectual. Some of them might have intellectual issues with it as well. But very often it's emotional, it's spiritual, because they feel an internal contradiction and they can't make it work together. So just in summary, I think that this is something that's crucial for us to be aware of, and it's crucial for us to step in and to recognize that we do need to intervene, but we need to do it in a healthy way. We need to do it in a way where there's dialogue, where there's conversation, where there's an understanding that this is a common struggle, this is a broad perspective, it's not about you and me and the power struggle, and I think through that we'll empower our teens to make healthy decisions and to really grow in the way that best suits them. Thank you all for coming.